All right, here we go.
How about now?
Yeah, thanks. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The Southeast Linux Fest is a community event for anyone who wants to learn more about Linux and free and open source software. It is part educational conference and part social gathering. Like Linux itself, it is shared with the attendees of all skill levels to communicate tips and ideas and to benefit all who use Linux and free and open source software. The Linux Fest is a place to learn, to make new friends, to network with new business partners, and most importantly, to have fun. Come join us for the first annual Southeast Linux Fest on June 13th, 2009 in Clemson, South Carolina. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
Give me a T!
T!
L!
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 T!
T!
S!
S!
What's that spell?
Let's
get it. It's a little thing T-Rex show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cats, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny daddies that are linking bad. For the streaming, go direct to DLNGS.org. And I see challenges at LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, go together, just about to begin.
Showtime! The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology, and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up. And take it away.
Another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. This is episode 297. Today is Wednesday, May 6th, 2009. Welcome, everybody. We've got Dan.
Yeah.
We've got Link.
Yay.
And joining us tonight is Solway Haglund. Solway,
yes.
Good to talk to you again.
Unplug the cable, Dan.
It's unplugged. How you doing, Solway?
I'm doing pretty well.
Solway, you had a very good blog posting the other day. You wrote an open letter to Larry Ellison about OpenOffice.org. For anybody who doesn't know, been living on their rock for the last month or two, Oracle purchased Sun Microsystems, which is a pretty big deal when you think about it, because Sun has a ton of technology, both software, hardware, and one of the things that they own is OpenOffice.org.
It was especially surprising for those of us who were following the IBM talks, which had only been canceled previously.
Yep, everybody thought it was going to be IBM.
Every year, like clockwork, there's a rumor that IBM was going to buy Sun, and then it looks like it was actually going to happen, and then in a sudden twist, Sun elopes with Oracle.
Well, we've talked a little bit about the impact of this purchase regarding some of the other things, such as MySQL and VirtualBox and a couple of the other items, but we really haven't talked about OpenOffice yet. And since you work very closely with OpenOffice on a regular basis, you had some thoughts on it.
Yes. Well, and, Larry may not be thinking every day over his morning coffee about OpenOffice, but I'm really hoping that this switch, this fairly dramatic shift, gives those of us who work with the product, some sort of opportunity to really make a shift and spring out of the kind of the gray in-between land where it's been living for the last 10 years. the adoption and recognition and name recognition. If I go to any tech meeting, everybody knows what it is now, at least. But if I go down and mention to the person making my coffee or the person selling me clothes that you chain an open office, I might as well say that I, work on Mars because they haven't heard of it. And, you're not going to get product recognition. You're not going to get product adoption without people knowing what it is. So I'm really hoping that that could somehow be the first step in the shift in somebody else being responsible, somebody else having, a different approach to it.
I guess, we talk about some microsystems. They've gone out and bought a ton of stuff over the years. And it seems that, honestly, they've dropped the ball on certain things.
Yeah, the ball is kind of rolling around on the floor a bit with OpenOffice. I mean, they had this whole thing with StarOffice where it was kind of free and kind of not, and the unified desktop at the time didn't, I think, win a lot of people over. And still people ask me, should I get OpenOffice or StarOffice? Like, well, you should. It doesn't really matter. But there's a problem with just understanding what the products are, too.
So you had some recommendations.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, I've heard this quote years ago. If you recommend it or if you reward it and measure it, people will do it. Thus, certification program. Microsoft has a rather extensive and fairly successful certification program for Microsoft Office. There's the mouse. There's the various other levels, and it's something you can put on your resume. It's something, if you haven't been out there using it in a job, then it's something you can put on your resume as something with actual value. And I think that's an obvious thing to do. I know there are various people working on it, various different approaches to it, but I think whoever's in charge of it, whether it's Larry or whether we get some sort of spin-off turned into a separate foundation or whatever, that's an absolute essential. It conveys legitimacy. It conveys incentive to do something about it. And then with more incentive, you get more people who know more and more about the product. That's one thing that is a bit of a problem is you can't ask Heather down the hall who's been using OpenOffice for 20 years how to do something. There's usually an expert somewhere on site in some organization who can tell you how to do the really tough stuff in Microsoft Office, but as of yet, there isn't always that with OpenOffice, and I think one thing that would drive that is a certification program.
Certifications. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, you shut up, Pat. Just a quick question and your opinion on this. You had mentioned that you talk to the person in the break room and say, hey, OpenOffice, and they're like, what is that? What about the notion that, people might not even know exactly what Microsoft Office is? All they know is Office, and if you slip them OpenOffice in place of Microsoft Office, you think that they would immediately know that there's a big difference? not the newest version, but, because of the ribbon or whatever the heck. But, in my experience, a lot of people don't even know what operating system they have on their computer, let alone the applications they run.
Exactly, and they don't understand the difference between the operating system and Microsoft Office. People talk about how they use Vista to create their text documents and spreadsheets. I'm like, well, it's involved, yes, but... I hear about some stories where the administrators just tell people that there was an upgrade, didn't say it was to OpenOffice, and very few complaints. I know people who were, demonstrating doing something, just how to create a text document, not saying it was OpenOffice or something like that, on a computer, to people who had steadfastly resisted OpenOffice. They did it, they're fine, whatever, and then it was revealed to them later that, yes, it was Folgers Crystals, or rather, OpenOffice. So I think, actually, yeah, some sort of, Pepsi challenge, but more like a Folgers Crystals kind of thing, is really quite valuable, both in if you're trying to convince people on site to switch to OpenOffice, or I don't know, when we go on Oprah, we can just throw it up on the screen and ask people if they know what program it is.
You know, if you send Oprah a coupon for open office that she can give out to all her listeners, maybe you would have the grilled chicken phenomenon go on there.
I was just trying to print that out, and you know, it's the server is just too overwhelmed.
And you know what? Not only that, but it only runs in Windows and OS X using Safari because you have to install an application to be able to a coupon printer, they call it. So no grilled chicken for Linux users.
Well, Linux users can just are all fine cooks, right?
That's it. We pay full price for our grilled chicken. I heard there were fist fights and everything over that.
Pardon?
I heard there were fist fights and everything over that free chicken.
Fist fights over the coupon?
Apparently, people going in trying to cash in the coupons or something and not being enough and getting into fist fights and the lines. It's crazy.
It's a coupon. Photocopy it. I mean, this is going to go nuts.
You can't photocopy it because each one prints out with a unique barcode.
Oh, and they're all connected. You know, interesting that KFC would run only on Windows because I did training for them a while ago, and I thought they were taking a little bit of a look at Linux. But
no, it's not KFC. There's a third party service that does the provides the actual coupon. And they have I can't remember, but if you go to the site and you try and print it off, it'll come back and say you don't have a supported browser, and it'll give you direct instructions and stuff, and it's a third party involved there, but it's not KFC.
All right, we'll put the blame on the third party to be named later.
I'll find that out for you, but anyway.
Well, actually, a lot of comments, at least 20, on my blog entry about what Larry or other parties should do with OpenOffice now. And one of the comments was really just get the training up on YouTube and let it go viral. There's a little bit more detail to it, and I guess that's the YouTube and practical approach to what I'm suggesting with Oprah. But, the user said, you know, create high-quality video training courses, target some groups with different courses, and then just slap it on YouTube and let it go nuts. Which, of course, then begs the question, wouldn't it be nice to have a celebrity spokesperson, but could see what we can do with regular people. Of course, that involves a lot of work, too.
Looking back at your blog post, to get back on topic, Solway, you talk about partnerships and bundling. I guess, you know, OEMs would be a no-brainer, just putting a copy of OpenOffice on every new computer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if it's there and people don't have to go through the whole, it's free, therefore it's cheap, therefore it's going to ruin my computer process and fear, then, yeah, absolutely.
I bet you the vast majority of people wouldn't even notice that it's not Microsoft. They would just start using it.
Change the icons a little, maybe, or not. Yeah. Well, the a lot of kiosks where you go to a library or something like that, it just has a little icon spreadsheet, text document. And, of course, it's Linux. It's I can't remember the names of the ones offhand, but, yeah. The more it's just seems, and the more that people don't know the difference, you remove two huge barriers there. Because it's really, I mean, when I go on site and talk to people and try to persuade people, it's hardly ever about actual issues with the software. It's all about change. It's all about the human connection.
Absolutely. People are complacent. They don't want to learn anything new, anything that's, like, slightly different from what they're used to. They get all up in arms about it. You know, forces them to think.
I mean, it's like living in a small town all your life and then being confronted with Thai food. I mean, if you live in a small town that, you know, where there was no Thai food, just so many people for so long have only used Microsoft Office, and they think that's the only thing there is, and they think that it's the only thing there is for a reason, because you should only use Microsoft Office. It's really, if you don't constantly expose yourself to new things, then you'd kind of atrophy to a certain extent. So, and I have hopes for, you know, the next, you know, people coming up who've had to learn a new Facebook interface every few months, or a new interface for this, that, and the other thing, and that ability to, and expectation that the icons are not always going to be in the same place, that you have to go look under another menu sometimes, and that that's okay. I'm hoping that that will help in some ways, just toward a better attitude toward different operating systems, different office suites.
And then you talk about library, schools, and government. Again, this is a no-brainer.
Yep, absolutely.
Why should a school spend tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars on, you know, a couple thousand licenses of Microsoft Office where they can get open Office for absolutely no cost?
Yeah, absolutely no reason. It's, I mean, I know that they get the discount, but really, when you're talking the greater good, you know, educating kids, it's important, and then the combination of that with tax dollars, you really got to really be skeptical about any purchase that you don't have to make when there's such a good alternative. I mean, and a lot of people, like one thing that comes up a lot when I go train in schools is, well, does it have clip art? It doesn't have pre-made templates. It doesn't have clip art. Well, it has whatever you want. I mean, once you get the clip art in, once you download it and the system administrator installs it, it's much easier to get to than the Microsoft Office stuff. You just choose View Gallery, and bam, you can drag stuff in immediately. You don't have to go searching around for it. I was really surprised, actually, recently when I poked around in Microsoft Office for this mini certification thing I was doing, to find that it was definitely a couple extra steps to get the clip art in with Microsoft Office, whereas OpenOffice, you just bring it in. So really, for the whole, you know, the K-6 crowd, it's easier that way. And I mean, really, the templates really aren't a barrier. So I think maybe that's part of some resistance in schools, is the lack of the fun eye candy and the stuff that a lot of people use on a daily basis for the lower grades. And that's why, I mean, it would be really nice to have just a take care of the licensing somehow, not sure how, and prepackage just a really fantastic, you know, half gig downloadable or CD-able version of OpenOffice that's just crammed to the gills, already pre-installed with just the prettiest clip art and templates you ever saw.
Back to schools. I mean, you know, in the current economic downturn, you know, people are getting laid off, they're losing jobs. Anything to save just one or two people, I think, would be worth it. And plus they can hand out CDs with OpenOffice on it to their students. You know,
Easy.
There you go. Here's a full office suite. Use it.
And I know schools that do that, and the parents won't let the kids install it because they think there's something wrong with it or they're afraid of it. They think it'll ruin their computer. So, yeah. But you're absolutely
right. Those must be the same people who go to, like, a store and buy software in a box?
Very possibly. Oh, well, of course. I mean, I hear about schools considering go to 4-day week. We just had a vote narrowly voting against that here in Colorado, I think. I mean, if you're considering going to 4 days a week to save money, I mean, come on. Let's do the easy stuff first instead of cutting out a whole day of class, of valuable learning. Let's try to switch to some free software first. That would be the first thing to try. And then, of course, government. I mean, come on. Government using proprietary software with, and of course, all the associated lobbying. And I mean, that's, I'm really hoping that in our brave new world of transparency now, that there'll be some serious, intelligent evaluation of all the open source software options available.
I guess at the end of the day, it all really boils down to what Larry Ellison wants to do. I mean, he runs that company, you know, since the beginning, and you know, it's no secret that he's no fan of Microsoft, and he's had his run-ins with them over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the question is, does he want to go after Microsoft using OpenOffice himself, or does he want to spin it off and let somebody else try to get Microsoft? Or does he? I don't know. I really haven't seen any references to him talking about office suites. That may be a little too detailed or too minor for him. I'm not sure.
Yeah, have they come out with any statements? I know there was one somebody from the company when they announced it, you know, saying that they were looking at everything.
I haven't seen anything. Mostly it seems to have been just the announcements and people talking about it. I'm really not aware of really a lot about how these, like how Mozilla works, stuff like that, but I mean, on the face of it, it seems like it would be kind of nice for OpenOffice to be its own thing, to have its own foundation. Perhaps there'd be a little bit more of the good things that I'm trying to, that I've listed in the blog entry if that happened.
So, I mean, worst case scenario, they could always sell their Star Office, OpenOffice division. And, I mean, would that not be appealing to somebody like IBM?
Yeah, because, well, IBM and Novell are both invested, have done development with OpenOffice. So you'd think they'd be a little more into it, perhaps particularly Novell. It would be nice. I don't know. It would be nice to have somebody with some real incentive, some real focus, just charging forward with it. Focus, incentive, strategy, good strategy, and money. Always a good combination.
OpenOffice is released under the LGPL.
Pardon?
OpenOffice is released under the LGPL, the Lesser GNU Public License.
Mm-hmm.
General Public License.
And just to circle back with my item, libraries, schools, and governments, I mean, libraries especially, it's such an obvious thing, especially since our libraries have the lending aspect. So, you know, you come in, maybe there's a pile of CDs next to the computer. That would be nice.
Well, one of the other things I was thinking about in preparation for tonight was, and I don't know if they've ever published any of this information or numbers on that, is StarOffice/OpenOffice a profitable venture? Was it a profitable venture for Sun? Or was it profitable to the extent that they might not have made a lot of money on it, but they recouped their loss or development time in the fact that they didn't have to pay a license to use Microsoft Office?
Yeah, your guess is as good as mine. I suspect that it was more subtle than actually making money. Like you say, with the not having to spend the licenses. Actually, when I was at Sun before, we used Applix before StarOffice, and that was perhaps not the most reliable piece of software in my experience. But yeah, I mean, it certainly makes the Sun operating systems more appealing when you have the more marketable, more Microsoft-looking Office Suite on it.
Well, not to mention you get free development for their Star Office product, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, a bunch of really cool geek brownie points for hosting an open source project that a lot of people can use.
Oh yes, the geek brownie points are not to be underestimated. And I just want to say that the whole extensions thing with the little extensions that people can put together in code, love that so much. You don't have to wait for something to get approved by the big approval process. You can just put together an extension. People can choose to install it. It's fantastic. Some of the extensions like the upload or download from your Google Docs account, the one by Charles somebody that lets you just easily have a page that doesn't have a page number on the first page, and then second page is page two. God bless them. That was absolutely essential. And then there's a lovely extension where you can just make a point at a directory of graphics, and bam, you have a presentation made out of them. I use that almost daily to put together wireframes for websites. So really, really like the flexibility and the ingenuity from all the people who do the extensions.
I think that no page number on the first page is probably one of the hardest things for me to do in Microsoft Office.
In Microsoft Office?
I can't figure it out. Yeah.
Ah, ha, ha.
So it sounds like it's nice and easy in OpenOffice now.
With that extension, it is. Without the extension, then you have to understand the idea of styles, which, you know, and there isn't a lot to it. I mean, you go insert, manual break, page break, and then you click on the second page, and you choose insert, footer, and you click in the footer, and then you choose insert, fields, page number. And I think the fields is the thing that really throws people off. They're just looking for page number instead of having the subnav of fields. So that's the simplest. Oh, and then, well, there's one other step, but it's easy. It's easy, but it's much easier with the extension. And, you know, and just another thing, I mean, when people can make money on stuff, they'll do it and they'll promote it, and that's why I'm really hoping that whatever happens with OpenOffice, better assistance for partners, because I think Microsoft does that pretty well, giving people good hooks and good recognition and good et cetera for working with them.
Are there any other office suites? I mean, there used to be like Corel Office and a few others. I don't even know if any of them exist anymore that offer that level of support and certification or even something close to what Microsoft offers for their office suite.
Yeah, aside from WordPerfect, and of course IBM has their Symfony, which is OpenOffice 1.x. It really isn't there. I mean, there's good developer support for non-Microsoft products that aren't Office suites, but
there's WordStar. Remember that?
Oh boy, you're taking me back now. I used that in college. Good stuff. I still got the 5.25-inch floppies somewhere. Not sure why.
Well, I think my dad didn't use WordStar. He used FP Writer or something like that. It was just god-awful. And it was horrible. But he would still be using it today if it wasn't on a 5.25-inch floppy disk. And his drive burned out a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's something to be said for just a plain old markup kind of approach. If you like to type, and that's all you need.
I have to say, the really old versions of WordPerfect, that was a great word processor back in the DOS days. I remember using that, and it was just really... really easy to use, I thought.
Lots of control. You can make it do what you wanted and figure it out pretty easily.
You could see all the key codes and easily get rid of stuff that, you know, that you didn't want.
Yep. I still get WordPerfect users who ask me about reveal codes and say, well, you got these little non-printing characters, and they don't give you the bold italic, but they do give you, they do tell you where you hit return and where you press tab. And that's the first thing I do when I do troubleshooting is I turn on non-printing characters. It doesn't quite give you the same amount, but if you see something that's heavy in italic, pretty sure it's bold and italic. And then, of course, the thing that I always show people in OpenOffice, if they have a paragraph that's just getting a little crazy, just select it, and from the format menu, choose default formatting, and it'll just nuke it back to zero, the equivalent of just taking out all the reveal codes, and then you can start over, which isn't the final solution. It is the final solution, but, you know, sometimes it is, frequently, actually, it is so much better, so much faster to just nuke and restart the formatting than to try to fix it. Okay. That's definitely something to consider if you're trying to fix something. Just restart with the formatting.
Getting back a second to the certification, because I'm still stuck in the past here, but... You make some really valid points. Have you had a lot of customers or people that you've talked to that are using OpenOffice who have requested this? I mean, does it seem like it would be valuable and interesting to a lot of people out there?
I have had one customer request it, and I did just a very mini kind of certification test. Others have expressed interest in it. Here's the thing with certification is that it has two things. One, you know, just to, you know, let people say, hey, I'm a certified OpenOffice user. But the other thing is when you switch over to OpenOffice, there's going to be people who say, it's too hard, I can't do this, I can't do that. Well, when I went through the certification, I made the questions, you know, insert a paragraph or insert a picture, make this bold, et cetera. And then I went through and wrote out all the ways you could do it in Microsoft Office and all the ways you could do it in OpenOffice. And for at least 50% of these items, it's exactly the same. So if you can't do it in OpenOffice, it means you really aren't doing that well in Microsoft Office. I mean, even the navigation names are exactly the same. And then for like another 15%, the navigation is very similar, like there's an extra word here and there. So the certification, you know, one use is just for standard use, and another is to help with adoption, to show that it's not the software, it's really that the people were doing weird things with Microsoft Office in the first place. But I don't know, a lot of people at some client sites, it's the certification itself is not as big a deal. But I think, I don't know, the people who currently want certification in Microsoft Office, whether it's individuals who do a lot of temp work or people who just, you know, whose promotions perhaps are tied to their certification levels, if they get more money if they reach a certain level. They're absolutely the ones who would be interested in OpenOffice certification. Everybody's thinking very deeply about what I just said. I'm glad.
A dead pause, silence.
It was important.
Oh, you know what? I had my mute on because I was asking a question.
Okay.
How about overseas? What's the reaction of overseas? Is it in other countries? Is it something like a lot of popularity there? Maybe more so than in the U.S.
Oh, I definitely think more so. I was in Norway doing training in 2003, and I had possibly the most enthusiastic class I've ever had in Norway. spite of the fact that it's kind of interesting. I was using the Norwegian interface, but training, of course, speaking in English. So I can still remember that the word for spreadsheet in Norwegian is regnark or something like that. Well, for one thing, of course, the localization, I mean, you can just, you don't have to wait for some big company to do it on your own. I think in Vietnam, years ago, they were doing lots of localization. I'm not really up on the exact situation, but, you know, you periodically hear about, you know, France, all their police going to open office or various departments elsewhere. There was the, I think in Sweden, a while ago at least, they said that all business documents for the government had to be done in some sort of open standard. And again, I think that was around 2003. I think the U.S. is a little conservative with the, with open office for sure.
Wasn't there a recent study where they found out, you know, which countries are the most, you know, free and open source friendly? I think the U.S. was ranked like fifth, I think. And I think the top two countries were like France, Spain.
I wouldn't dispute that. Having no reason to dispute it. And no evidence. Yeah, I wonder what affects that.
I'm actually surprised if the U.S. was that high.
Yeah, that was my reaction too, actually. I mean, there's the individual, you know, the people like us, and then there's organizations, and how much do they, that might be an entirely different attitude. Perhaps organizations are more pro in France, or maybe individuals are more pro here, and it all evens out. That we're higher than you might think.
Interesting. What about, I mean, Oracle's a database company. What do you foresee with regards to some of the other software that Sun has, like Solaris and VirtualBox and a few of the other offerings that are of interest to our audience?
Way out of where I know anything.
Oh. Okay, fair enough. But you can continue what you were saying before.
Again, I mean, if you're used to Microsoft, if you're used to learning new software, if you're used to Office Suite, you know, sitting down with OpenOffice, not a problem. But somewhat, I think, I compare OpenOffice to, you know, I'm going to totally back down on what I was going to say, which is that OpenOffice could benefit from a little more, you know, wizardry, a little more, you know, how would UI do this? Walking it through, the mail merge could certainly benefit from something a little more wizardy. I know there is a wizard, but I don't like it that much. but you know, there's just a lot of you sit down with OpenOffice, and it's really obvious how much of it is. And I think that really the barriers to figuring it out are not so, when I come on site and people are having problems with it. It's really not because there's any problem with the software. It's because, you know, some people are just used to looking at the fourth menu and the fifth item down on that menu, and when it isn't there, they don't know what to do. I mean, I was about a year ago. I was on site
Luke,
somewhere.
Can I help you?
What?
Huh? Gorkon, mute yourself.
About a year ago, I was on site with someone, and they were having problems with templates in Impress, and you know, it was all problems, and they couldn't do this, and it was a big big problem, and they had to redo their presentations all the time. The documents really, they were not doing presentations, really. They were doing just normal text documents, but they were doing them in Impress. And that's not the best tool for the job, so that's going to cause problems. So many things, again, just have to do with people never having learned the proper way, never having been trained on the proper way to just do something. And the higher-ups, I mean, when you see these presentation files coming through with 12-point type, not knowing or wanting or whatever to have the authority to say, that should be a text document, let me work out some templates for you. So there's just a lot of crazy usage going on out there, just because that's how someone was taught once and that's how the way they've always done it. And I think with just a little, and I don't know how to do this, but a little bit more proper document production. Don't use spreadsheets to create text documents. Don't use Impress templates to create text documents. Then so many of the problems, the perceived problems with OpenOffice, would just not exist. Right tool for the job, proper document production. So.
Sol, I want to thank you for coming on the show again to give us your input on this topic. You know, OpenOffice is really important, and hopefully Oracle and Larry Ellison see the light, that it's really important to continue development for it and continue promoting it.
Yep, it's a really powerful tool for lots and lots of good things, only one of which is they're doing a little interesting stuff against Microsoft.
It's so important to have something else besides Microsoft Office.
Oh, yes, absolutely. To just be able to, because there's so many things you absolutely have to do, or very, very nearly absolutely have to do, forms, filling out forms, all that stuff for government, school, etc. And there shouldn't be this proprietary, cost-based barrier to doing stuff that you have to do. It's got to be available for everybody.
Awesome.
Alrighty.
Thank you. We'll probably move on to other stuff. You're more than welcome to stay on. Or if you have to go.
So I'm going to head on home.
Well, you have a safe trip, and thank you again for coming on. We really appreciate it. Keep up the great work.
Right. Take care.
Thank you. Thanks again for coming on.
Sorry about that, guys.
Yeah, no, you're not.
Excuses.
Yes, I am. That's my son. He's being a real pain in the you know what.
He's happy today.
Yeah.
Don't bring him down, Gorkon.
I think, Gorkon, that's going to warrant you making us some more Chex Mix there, buddy.
Wait, you know, I don't want to make Dan more... Wait a minute, it doesn't matter what Dan eats. He's going to fart anyway.
It's not nice.
Dan farts,
though. I apologize. Dave apologized for all of us.
Dave's not on. Chess is, though.
Yeah, he is.
It's about the same thing.
Well, if Dave were on, he would definitely apologize for everybody.
Uh-huh.
That's a good thing, because right, we need an apologist.
Yeah, we do. We need to have Dave on so that he can just clean up after us, you know, wherever we go. Go to a bar, he can stay after and say, you know, hey, guys, I'm really sorry about those guys, you know. It's really unfortunate that you let Dan in, that kind of thing.
Dave, send your hate mail to dsyates at lotlinuxlinks.com. He'll apologize. So what else has happened, guys? I guess nothing.
No.
Dan's guardian. That's what happened in that Dan's house.
Yep, Dan is guarding his internet.
Yeah.
Tell us how that's working for you there, Dan.
It's working pretty well.
Well, thank you very much for elaborating.
You know what? Installing Dan's Guardian was a snap. I did it on the Ubuntu, not Ubuntu, on Debian. Was that a dog?
Yeah, it's my dog.
Sounds like
he's attacking the cat.
What is this, Linux Cranks, and that's 3:30? Kajari's on?
Apparently. Dan's Guardian. That's where you were talking about.
Yeah, Dan's Guardian was a snap to install. I just installed it right off the Debian repositories. It was so easy. Had no problems whatsoever. And it was, once I did that, you have to install Dan's Guardian, Squid, so I did it with the packages, so you make sure you have Squid. You start Squid up, you start Dan's Guardian up, you go in. The simple way to do it is just to point the machine in the browser, set the proxy server settings to, point to your system. Lo and behold, it's up and running and filtering. It's pretty restrictive at first, but that's fine for my needs, because I don't use it on my main systems. Well, I don't use it on the system I use the most. I know how to get around it, but there's other ways that you can protect your protect the devices on there. Because, and I got to be careful in case little ears are listening in, but you can easily disable Dan's Guardian by getting rid of the proxy settings under your browser. But they're not aware of that yet. So I also keep an eye on the logs and everything, and on the logs of the not only Dan's Guardian, but what's going on the systems and monitor other things. So more than likely, a lot of stuff ends up happening by accident. You know, when you put something in and you wind up in another site that you're not supposed to. So, I mean, aside from preventing people going to places they shouldn't, it also helps prevent that accidental.
Dan,
your oldest
daughter is how old now?
11.
My daughter is 15. I can quantifiably, almost 16 by the way, I can quantifiably tell you that it does not happen by accident.
I know. The little one could end up in places by accident because she looks up stuff that she shouldn't. I mean, she normal stuff, but which of course people you put in kissing in a search engine or a love song, and chances are you might get something you don't expect. So that's why you should also turn on safe searching, restricted searching.
I have a feeling I'll be setting that up pretty, in the next couple of years.
It's pretty simple. Hold on one second. Yeah, it's easy. I mean, if you wanna take the ultra easy way out, you could just go get Smoothwall. I think that's what it is, that live distro.
Yeah.
Or that comes complete with Dan's Guardian and everything. But otherwise, you could set it up just as,
or something.
Yeah, or it's a snap to set up, even compile from source. I mean, I installed Squid on Slackware and was using that for just playing around with that a couple of years ago, and that was easy to set up. So. Getting all that stuff.
Did you publish directions on exactly what you did to get that running?
No, I didn't publish directions because it was just apt-get install Dan's Guardian AppGet install Squid, which that was the thing that threw me right there when I first started running it. It would not run properly, where it was running, but it wouldn't work. And that's because for some reason by default, even though it requires a proxy, it doesn't install Squid. There's another proxy you could use. I forget what the other one was called, but Squid's the one I'm most familiar with.
And then what's the configuration like after you get those two packages? I'm installing it right now to play with it, so what's the configuration like after you get them installed?
I didn't do any configuration. Like I said, I just left it at the defaults. You know, and it worked just fine, so.
Okay.
One of my biggest complaints about it is when I went to the website, and I just wanted a simple, like, installation/configuration documentation, but I couldn't really find that. I mean, there was a lot of how-tos, like, it looked like they had great documentation in Spanish and in Italian, a how-to for it, but the other ones were like, well, how to get it installed and running on OpenSUSE, or how to get it installed and running in Ubuntu as a local service, so that you can run it locally and protect that machine only, or something like that. So, And of course, they have this huge wiki with a lot of information, but not exactly what I wanted to find. Also,
and you sent this, the proxy port is, what, 3128?
No, you just send it to 8080 on your systems. Like on the client machines, you just put the proxy to 8080.
Okay. We'll see.
Can't you do a transparent proxy on your network if you did that at the router?
You can, and there's instructions for doing that, but I only wanted to do two machines, the only two that are used by other people. Mm. And I wasn't too concerned about going into any detail. I'm lazy, man. Come on. I set it up. I pointed it, the browsers to it. It worked fine. My job was done for the moment. I would like to get back, go more into detail. As for monitoring and stuff, I briefly looked into that. There doesn't seem to be, like a nice web interface for monitoring it on just by installing the defaults. I looked through some of the write-ups and they had recommended Webmin. There's an alpha plugin to Webmin that allows you to manage it. I just used grep on the logs of itself. And if you just do a grep for denied, you can see everything that was denied. So what people attempted to get to. Unfortunately, there was no excitement the past couple of days, so it was kind of boring for me. I was planning on changing the default screen when you try to access a site that's restricted. It comes up and it's this warning. It says the site was restricted. Contact your system administrator. I wanted to change it to something like "busted, I'm watching you," but the wife said that's probably not a good idea.
Contact your dad.
So I had to settle with yelling. I had to settle
it, like, redirect to one of your favorite sites, Dan.
Nah, I want to keep them away from
oh,
that.
Oh, no.
So I had to settle for having the Myth TV box yell at him again last night, so.
Where in Fire? Are they using Firefox?
Yeah, if you're in all the browsers, actually. There's probably another place you could set it, but if you go to Edit, Preferences, and over to Advanced, Advanced, and you click on Network and Connection Settings.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. There's probably another place you could set it to, and they talk about that. But, the more experience one gets, and the more one explores, the more one can get into trouble.
I see.
So now you can set all your systems to go through there and block your MySpace like you so desperately want to. Your poor wife.
Oh wow, you can't! I can't even get to Google.
Really?
Really.
Google wasn't blocked for me. What are you running it on, CentOS?
I just installed it on Ubuntu.
Ooh, they have it really locked in. Where can you go? Can you go to
search engine?
I can't go to anywhere.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it everything access denied? You get the Dance Guardian screen?
No, I get proxy server refused connection, so I'm probably on the wrong port somewhere.
Do you have Squid installed?
Oops. I do.
Is Squid running?
I'm going to find out.
Because you have to, I think you have to start Squid up first and then Dance Guardian.
Squid is running.
And Dance Guardian is running, right?
Dance Guardian has, it says Dance Guardian has not been configured.
Oh, there's a line that you have to get rid of in the initial configuration file. If you actually look, it's right at the top. It says, you know, delete this line or hash it out. Because they want you to actually look through the configuration before you just go ahead and use it.
This is the unconfigured.
How dare they expect you to read before you jump in?
Well, I asked a question, and you said it was just ready to go, so, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, I forgot about that part.
Uh-huh.
That was the second thing that threw me right
lies.
There.
It oh, it works right off then. You know, restart it, and off it goes.
Is it running for you now?
It is.
Is it still blocking Google?
It is not blocking Google.
But you could just put in a...
Somebody at one time told me about a site called YouPorn, and when I tried to go there, it blocked me right away.
There you go. Yeah, just put, like, sex in the URL field, and it'll just block you right off the bat. But you could add black lists and gray lists and white lists and all sorts of stuff. It's pretty easy once you get into it, but that would require reading the docs.
And this does,
like,
of course,
said,
generate logs,
setting
too.
Setting this up sometime in the next couple years.
Oh, yeah, this is a good idea here.
Dun-dun-dun. So get it installed now. Make your wife unhappy.
Where do you find the logs and the reporting for this stuff, Dan?
Should be under, well, in mine it was var log Dance Guardian. And there was the access. I think that's where it was. Hold on. Let me double check. Now you're going to make me look. I'm lazy.
Well, we want you to, you know. Dance,
you want a
var log Dance Guardian access log. We want a review, yeah, man.
Yeah, well, that's where it is.
It has his name. Mm-hmm.
All right. Var log, Dance Guardian. If you look in the access logs, like I said, if you want to see what's denied, just do grep denied capital letters, all caps, and you can see all the places that were denied. Oh, look at this. I got some denied on here.
Oh, my goodness.
For today. Let's see what they were trying to get to today. All right, let's
and now, since
oh,
this
you
is
know what?
Squid.
Yeah, you know what? You know what got blocked for me?
What got blocked?
Interesting. I was going to Google Analytics got blocked for me when I was on Brian Lunduke's stuff. And it was banned a regular expression URL. Oh, I wonder why.
Hmm.
Dan was looking for something about parties with lemons.
You funny. No, but just Google Analytics was the only thing that was blocked for me today. And that was me doing it, so nothing that somebody else was. Like I said, I spent all of 5 minutes setting this up. It worked. I'm happy. Everybody's happy.
No, they're not happy.
Well, they don't know yet.
Furious.
I don't think they
don't like that. They hate you.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that.
Hey, I got a question for
Dad,
you guys.
You suck.
You suck. What?
I was reading about this utility, FlashROM, and what it is a command line utility that lets you flash your BIOS, and it sounds really cool. It sounds like it's been going through all kinds of development, and it's getting close to a 1.0 release and stuff, and it supports all kinds of motherboards and machines and all kinds of things. So I compiled it. It was really easy. It was just basically a make install, and then I downloaded the BIOS update for my computer. I have a Dell Optiplex 755, and the only way I could find it, even in Dell's FTP servers, was as an .exe file. And so what I can't tell is, I haven't run this thing yet. I'm kind of scared to run it. But I can't tell if it has to be a bin file, you know, like a normal firmware type of flashing file, or if it can use the .exe file, or if there's a way to extract the .exe, the bin from the .exe file. I tried using cab extract and that didn't work. So that's where I am. So I'm trying to figure out what to do. Has anybody ever used FlashROM? Graybeard says I have to use the image.
I thought I did, but I can't remember.
Where did you get FlashROM from
cool.
again?
Here, it's it's part of Coreboot. I'll put it in the chat. It's really cool. It supports all kinds of chipsets. And it's really easy to use, apparently. But I don't know how to get the thing out of the .exe file. And I can't find, like I said, I even found Dell's FTP servers, and I was kind of browsing through their FTP server, and all they had was, for this particular box, was the .exe file. So I didn't know if anybody had any experience with that or extracting bin files from .exe files.
Bin files from .exe. What are you trying to do again? What are you trying to extract? Like, what application?
I'm trying to flash the BIOS, and I'm assuming, maybe wrongly, that I can't use FlashROM on the Windows .exe file. I'm assuming that it needs some kind of, .bin file, which is like a firmware upgrade type file. Because other postings I've seen about this talked about using FlashROM with bin files. And so my question is, if I need to use a bin file and I can't use the .exe file, how do I get the bin file out of the .exe file? Because I'm assuming it's in there. The .exe file, the Windows.exe file, is just kind of like there could be an archive in there. Or self, yeah, Graybeard.
Did you try looking in it like a zip?
Well, I tried unzipping it, and that didn't work. And I know there's a configuration option for unzip. I can't remember what it is, but it's supposed to unzip .exe files, and that didn't work. I haven't tried running it with the .exe file. I suppose I could use, .cmu or something to run the .exe file just to extract the files out of it.
Or Wine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you could just change the extension to .zip and look at it in Nautilus or something.
Will that work?
File roller.
That might work.
Have you ever been successful with doing
me.
That?
I've done it on something. Yeah.
You've done it on
some things. I can't remember what it was. It wasn't a BIOS image, though.
But this flash ROM looks really cool. I mean, it looks like it'll be a nice way to flash your BIOS without having to... I mean, just from the command line. They even talk about you can flash your BIOS from a running system.
You know, I do have to say, though, you know, with the little bit of trouble you're having there, it sounds extremely risky to flash your BIOS that way.
Yeah.
This application's so cool, after I ran it, my system won't boot anymore.
I like the way they do it on the E. It's really nice in the E. You stick in the thumb drive and you hit a certain key combination and it looks on the thumb drive for the image and that's it. I mean, it's that easy. It just installs the BIOS. It's slick.
So what kind of motherboard is this?
That way on yours too, Dan.
It's an Intel chipset. It's one of these Intel ICH chipsets. Because it's just a Dell, you know, it's a Dell Optiplex.
Getting a Dell, dude.
I got a you're Dell. Getting, I love it, man.
You're getting a Dell. You're flashing your Dell, dude. Flashing it right to the end. Down. Be careful with flashing it, man.
So,
I don't want to hear you crying in a few minutes.
Dan,
huh?
You said you were listening to Brian's website. Did you listen to his Linux Sucks thing?
I listened to most of it. That I did. Why did you?
No.
Why not? What's your problem? You afraid of a little information? You afraid of challenging your views? You afraid you might agree with him?
Challenging your views.
Did anybody else listen to it besides me?
I watched it.
I looked at his slides, and I thought, number one, I thought he made some valid points.
Agreed.
I don't really agree with his presentation of it, and...
I agree, too. His approach sucks.
His approach, that's what I was looking for. His approach, and I don't necessarily agree with his conclusions. For some reason, I always get the impression, when listening to a lot of what he says, that he misses the ball, or the boat, on the whole concept of free and open source software, and just the community behind Linux, and how we got from point A to point B. And I don't think sacrificing or tossing what has worked, or the licenses or everything, or how it's worked, getting us from point A to point B out the window is the right path. I mean, I think there's a middle ground here with some consolation, but... What do you think, Jess, since you brought it up?
I haven't listened to it, so I don't know exactly what his points are, but I imagine... Is he kind of saying, like, things need to be easier or, like, stuff doesn't work and that kind of thing? I mean, is that kind of the gist of where he's coming from?
Well, if I could paraphrase, and again, I strongly encourage you to... can somebody post a link in the IRC? Because you're getting my recollection of his presentation, which may be tainted, and it's important that you go and actually listen to his words and not take mine at face value. But kind of in a nutshell, if I'm recalling correctly, his arguments why Linux sucks and what we can do about it was from a developer's point of view, largely from a developer and a user's point of view, and he identified very weak areas, which a lot of us have complained about in the past, talking about multi-monitor support. I'm talking about the fact that when looking at stuff like applications general users want to have access to, video editing being one of them, which we have talked about extensively on this show in the past, and how the offerings under Linux today pale in comparison to what was offered for Windows and Mac even 10 years ago, according to his opinion, for the general user. The fact that we are more concerned with freedom and against proprietary applications, and the idea that everything should be free and developers need to eat money, there's no standardization, package management is a nightmare from a developer standpoint. We should choose one package management system, be dumb and be damned to the rest of them. The Linux audio sucks. We should choose a system and stick with it, you know, not switch it around every couple of years. His viewpoint was, pick one.
The dog doesn't like that, Dan. You might want to back off of those.
I gotta settle down. Hey, Joel, you let your dog know. I'm just. Don't shoot the messenger, man. I may be getting stuff wrong, but a little off base. But he
it's
said,
not Dan,
you know,
who's saying it.
It's not me. It's I am trying to recall exactly what he said. I guess one of his quotes was, you know, use GStreamer. We're done. That's it. Case closed. You know, so if you've listened to Linux Action Show, he reiterated a lot of his points in a succinct, well done presentation, I thought. But then again,
it shows a lot of his lack of understanding of how things really are supposed to work. You know.
See, it sounds to me like he's describing a Linux environment that is very Windows or Mac-like. And if Linux ever becomes like that, then to me, that will suck.
It's like the old argument that, you know, Linux needs, you know, Photoshop ported to it. You know, I respond with Linux users in general don't need Photoshop on Linux. Photoshop users need Photoshop ported to Linux so they can switch.
There you go.
Yeah, see, I don't think Linux needs proprietary software or anything like that. I mean, as a general rule, I mean, yes, certain users may want certain applications, but for Linux to, quote, succeed, it doesn't need some of these things. And, you know, I think for me, you know, how some people say they want Linux to, you know, beat Windows or something like that. See, I don't want that. I don't care about that. And I mean, it's not about that. In fact, it's probably, at least in my view, purely my opinion, I'd rather have Windows remain the dominant operating system, because I think, you know, Linux, I don't want Linux to lose its, to lose what it is, you know, what it is now. And I think it would have to sacrifice some of those things to, quote, beat Windows. So I'd rather be number two than number one. You know, I don't know if that makes sense. Maybe I'm the only one who feels that way.
Go ahead, Dan.
I was just going to say, I understand what you're saying, Chess, but I'm going to let Pat take over.
We talk about audio. This is a big area. Pulse Audio, the default configurations that's been implemented in different distributions, especially in Ubuntu, have been lacking, to say the least, and that's the truth. You know, it should be implemented better. It should work out of the box. You know, basically Brian's talk, it was like just a summary of every little niggling thing, any annoyance that comes along over the last years of running Linux. That's my impression. You know, we people bitch about certain applications not being on Linux. Well, okay, professional audio, professional video editing, yeah, there needs to be a commercial application, I think, that has a company behind it that's working on it continuously, releasing new updates and patches and everything. You know, some people are happy with Cinelara and Cadian Live, you know, which are great projects, but I don't think those guys have the manpower to really, you know, make a professional grade quality application. You know.
Wait, are you saying professional grade or are you saying consumer grade? Because
I'm saying professional grade.
Because there are professional video editing.
They are. There's one out there. I forget the name of it. It's like $20,000.
Well, there are, and I mean, I wouldn't consider, like Cinelara, I don't consider consumer grade. I think that that's a lot more high end than consumer grade. Like consumer is your iMovie or something akin to that, which I believe with Cadian and Live and Kino would strive for to be a little better than iMovie.
Those applications are getting better, and yeah, you could do Blender and you could do video editing in Blender. I know that, Richard Caron, but it's not the primary function. Video editing in Blender, but anyway, I think there needs to be somebody who's paid to work on it continuously. That's what I'm saying. Any one of those, you know. Now, well, as far as audio editing, there's this project called Ardour, okay, Ardour.org, okay. That's a professional audio recording editing application. It's phenomenal. Paul Davis and his crew have done a bang-up job with that program. I just became a subscriber to that application because I think it's very important. You know, here's a guy who's willing to work on it full time as long as he meets certain subscribers every month. So if you use Ardour, please contribute to Ardour.org. Subscribe or just give a one-shot payment. Anything will help.
Well, see, you know, and that's the thing right there. I mean, Ardour and applications like Ardour are great and wonderful. And, you know, if we can get people supporting them and providing financial support in particular is a wonderful thing. And we encourage that 100%. You know, that's great. But on the flip side is if there isn't any support like that and they can't continue the development to the extent that they are, that would be unfortunate, but I don't think the project is just going to die. I mean, there's a ton of projects out there that still continue on. Maybe development doesn't happen as fast as it does, but the capabilities for the project to exist, to live on, are there. You know, who's to say another company won't come and pick it up, or another individual won't come and pick it up and make changes to it? That's the beauty of open source and free software. It might not evolve as fast as you'd like it to, and sometimes it evolves faster than you want it to.
Well, one of the things they're doing on Ardour now is they have a bounty system in place. Okay, basically, you go in, you sign up, and you say, I want this feature implemented, I'm willing to pay this amount of money towards that. And if you get enough people to kick in for that feature, you'll have something that one of these programmers could go implement and get paid for it at the end of the day. It makes everybody happy.
Well, sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's ways, I think. And I do agree with Brian that programmers need to eat. You know, people need to eat. Link needs to eat.
Well, I mean, I think it's... Yeah, clearly, you know, especially with the name of that particular presentation, I mean, it's obviously intended to be inflammatory and, you know, raise eyebrows and get eyeballs and that kind of thing, which I can totally understand. You know, I certainly don't think Linux sucks. I mean, there are certain things about it that have problems, like the audio. Yeah, I mean, the Pulse audio stuff is crazy, but that's at a lower level, and I don't think you can take those specific instances, those kinds of things, and generalize in a larger sense. I don't know.
What, when you mean taking something like Pulse Audio and generalize it when it sucks because of Pulse Audio?
Right.
Well, I think more to the point.
I'm sure the argument is, well, there's lots of these little things, so you add them all up, and in general, Linux sucks because of all these little things. I imagine that's the argument.
I believe so, that when just looking at, you take Linux, you take the BSDs, and you stack them up against Windows and OS X, by and large, you know, you compare them to the two, you're looking at a core set of libraries and APIs and tools on OS X and on Windows that are standard. You know, they're standard because that's what Microsoft says you're going to use. That's what Apple says you're going to use. Whereas under Linux and the BSDs, I mean, you have choices. You know, Qt, GTK, ALSA, running straight to ALSA, or using GStreamer or Phonon, you know, for audio. You have SDL, you have OpenGL, you have all sorts of different things that you can write towards, you know, which makes it a little more difficult and a little more complex on the back end of stuff to make sure that if somebody's going to run your application, they need to have the required libraries to be able to run that application, which may or may not be standard. So if you're going to write something in TK, in Tickle, you know, as far as I know, you do an install of Ubuntu, it doesn't come with Tickle. Because that's pretty old. And I don't think a lot of Ubuntu comes with Tickle. Debian might not come with Tickle. Does CentOS come with Tickle or Fedora by default out of the box? So if you're writing a Tickle application, yeah, you have a choice to install that. If you do a full install, it's in there.
Right.
But if you write your application in Tickle and somebody goes to run it and it doesn't run because they can't find the TK libraries, TCL libraries, you know, it can be frustrating, which makes more data. That's where package management comes into play. But what do you write for? Debian packages, Arch packages, Gentoo package system, RPMs. Which one? He says RPM's the winner. Go with that. Linux standard base says RPM. But that's not the Linux works.
Well, yeah, no, of course it doesn't, and it's never going to. And I think asking for some of those things is kind of a waste of time, because there's no way everyone's just going to settle on GStreamer, or everyone's going to settle on RPM, or everyone's going to settle on GNOME. That's just not going to happen.
Right. And I think that I don't want to see that happen.
Yeah, I don't either.
I mean, I think back again to I think one of the issues and areas of contention that he has is, as a developer, it's hard for him to write Radical Codex or any of his other applications and sell them on the Linux platform, you know, on Linux in general, because of the complexity and the diversity of distributions, that he can create a Debian package, but it's not going to be able to be installed in an OpenSUSE system. And he can create an RPM for OpenSUSE, but it might not work on SLED, or it might not work on Fedora because of library differences. And the problem is, when you write a closed-source application and attempt to distribute it across different distributions, you run that risk if you're managing it all yourself, whereas an open source application can be packaged by the distribution maintainers a lot more easily. Which is not to say that a closed source proprietary app can't be packaged properly by the distribution maintainers should they elect to do so, but it's far more difficult to get a lot of distributions to buy into a closed source application than it is an open source application or a free application. So you're trying to swim up, you know, up the waterfall, as opposed to going with the flow of the river, which makes it a lot more difficult. So you're going to have, you know, you're going to experience these rough areas. A lot of commercial proprietary companies are getting around that by providing a simple tarball, you know, a simple install, tarball yep. install, and like World of Goo, you know,
yeah,
and Book of Eshelon.
I did just kind of play around with World of Goo, and you're right, and even like some of the VMware stuff, or even like the Flash plugin, you know, from Adobe, a lot of that stuff is just in a tarball that you extract, and maybe you run a simple Perl script that comes in it or whatever, or you just move something to the right location, and that's it. Very easy.
But yeah, it is extremely easy.
I did something with an install shield.
Install shield?
Today I installed something with install shield. Yeah.
What kind of freedom-hating software are you installing?
It happened to be an LDAP browser, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it worked.
Was it a proprietary application?
I'm sure it probably was, but it's free.
Did it work well?
But yeah, you ran setup and you saw the standard install shield stuff. IBM does it for Linux with install shield too.
Loki's had like an install shield. The Loki installer was similar to mm-hmm. that. I mean, there are avenues to get around that.
We can ship your own statically linked libraries. Get around library compatibility issues.
That's what IBM does with a lot of their Java stuff. For instance, the Linux and Mac versions of Lotus Notes, they have their own statically linked Java libraries in there. So even if the person doesn't have Java installed on their machine, the application will work fine. But they're monster packages, mm-hmm. you know, 200-400 meg in size, you know.
Yeah, and you know that's one of the problems that you have with distribution of software that way. It gets software bloat and multiple libraries on the system.
But it works.
So it does work, and you know that was one of the arguments with what was that they've always been trying to create that mythical what was it called? Kind of like Apple does that with their applications. What do they call? What's the Apple applications called?
IMG.
What?
I thought they had a specific name for that.
Our Apple. Yeah, our Apple lover isn't online tonight.
Just like PKG. Or
well,
something?
Wait a minute. One of them is.
Is it? Was it? No, it's. Link? Well, it's an application package, but with on OS X, you just drop it in. It has pretty much everything you need to run, right. in self-contained. But that results in a larger footprint. And there were a couple of Linux installation or Linux packages. There's a couple of services that wanted to do that. You know, were moving in that direction, that you could have a application, and then it was almost like the click and run interface too. What was that? It was a couple of years ago.
I know that PCBSD has that. Their PBIs is the exact same thing. It's a self-contained, statically linked, you know, package that's got everything in one folder or one package, if you will. I think it was that click thing,
right?
Or something.
It was the same kind of deal. It's like a compressed file, binary,
right.
Self-contained.
Yep.
Yeah, it had everything it needed inside its own little application directory.
Right.
Yeah. So it was all statically linked, and you didn't really have to go outside. For the libraries, but then you know that ends up being huge. I mean, you do something like that for OpenOffice, and that's going to be a huge application.
Yeah, part of it makes sense, I guess, but I don't know. I think what it boils down to is just the choices that we all have in everything, whether it's distributions or desktop environments or what have you. That's what it's all about, and the community is what gives us that choice, because every, you know, developers have an itch that they want to scratch, and that's why we, you know, us as end users get to choose from all these different things, and that's what it's all about. It's not about trying to decide on one single sound system or one single desktop environment. I mean, that's just not it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And furthermore, with regards to that in the general population, honestly, I mean, do you really think that someone who would go out and buy a netbook with Ubuntu that wasn't really, you know, interested in geeky and stuff, just wanted to get use out of it, is going to complain as much about whether, you know, which libraries and having freedom to be able to change this or that? Nah, they're just going to use it. You know, you always hear about, you know, one of the biggest things that you hear, used to hear, of course, was from companies why we don't support or provide pre-installed Linux is what distribution are we going to choose? If we choose Ubuntu, then people are going to cry and complain about Fedora. They want Fedora. Well, you know, by and large, not really. I mean, the majority of the people who would buy a system, like a netbook or whatever, with Linux installed, who buy an Aspire, you know, if it's a Linux geek, they're not going to, they can bitch about what distributions on it, but they're going to change it if they want to.
Absolutely.
Whereas the person who buys it, you know, like my wife or something, mm-hmm. she's not going to change her distribution. She's going to use it because,
exactly.
you know, it's what
let,
she...
Let me ask you this, Dan, though. Would you say, I mean, do you think that Linux, and when I say Linux, I just mean, you know, I don't mean necessarily the kernel or any particular distribution or anything like that. I just mean all of this that we're talking about together, the Linux community. Do we need to do everything possible to get as many users as possible? I mean, is that the goal? Is that the big picture goal? I mean, because, I mean, if it is, then if it's a slippery slope, at some point you're going to say, well, then we need to start giving up freedoms. We need to start doing this and start doing that in order to get the grandmas and the people who have absolutely no interest whatsoever in anything technical at all. And therefore, we're going to have things like, you know, the don't zap thing in X and the and how and this and the configureless X server and all these things to make it as easy as possible for the greater number of, to the greatest number of people, you know, is that the way we're headed?
I
personally, I hope not.
At the end of the day, it's still Linux. Yeah,
well, I hope you're right, Gorkon.
Still Linux.
I mean, I hope it remains that.
I mean, look at it this way. It's like the Mac, Mac OS X. If you want to use a command line, it's there. Apple's doing nothing to hide from you. Really, the same thing goes with Ubuntu. You know, if they wanted to start taking the command line away, like no more bash, you know, basically write a graphical shell, then you might have a case, but I just don't see that happening.
I don't want that to happen. I mean, to me, the end goal...
I don't either.
For me personally, I hope that the goal of Linux is not to do anything possible, anything under the sun to get as many users as possible. I hope that's not the case. But that's just me.
Well, you know, on the flip side to that, I mean, one...
You don't want them to make compromises.
Yeah, that's right.
On the flip side to that, though, I mean, I think there is, as time goes on, there is a greater and greater interest of people wanting something other than Microsoft and Windows. And there's a, you know, there's an interest that also of not wanting Apple, you know, more choice. And as people are exposed to more choice, you get the general layperson who wants to try something out or try this out and he's heard good things about it. And would like it to be a little more flexible or a little more easier for them and not have as many choices. And that's where a distribution comes into play. Something like, I think Ubuntu is doing a great job on that. I don't think that we have to sacrifice the flexibility and the tenets of what brought got Linux to where it is today, sacrifice all that for the general user to make it simple and stupid.
Yeah, honest,
I hear what
though.
You're saying.
I know we have all done it, but how often do you hit Control-Alt-Backspace these days?
No, I think there's stupid choices like that. That's ridiculous.
Well, I can't do it all, actually.
Went to the blue moon.
Yeah, I know.
But you run into Slackware?
Maybe in a year.
Well, yeah. I know what you mean, though. But I think, Dan, what you're saying, I mean, you know, I agree, and I think it's just that's a tough fine line, and I hope that, you know, I hope that fine line can be maintained. I just worry that at some point people will start sacrificing or compromising. I mean, I'd rather have people, you know, the people you were talking about that wanted something different other than Windows and Mac. I think it's great. I mean, I want as many people to come over to Linux as they want to come over to Linux. I mean, that's why I did the whole Linux Reality podcast. But at the same time, I feel like people should understand that it is different, and they need to. It's kind of like if you're going to come use Linux, then you need to learn more about it. It's not Windows. Linux is not Windows, and it's not Mac OS X.
I agree with you on that, but I think
between
go ahead.
Like the difference between driving here in the United States and here in Europe, you know, it's similar skills, but it's a little bit different because you're driving on a different side of the road.
That's only in Britain and Ireland.
That's the way I kind of look at it, you know.
Everywhere in Europe, they drive on the right hand side.
Like but it's like that though. I mean, because to be honest, you know, if you're using like GNOME or KDE, it's very, very similar to Windows already. It's just a little bit different. And in some cases, a lot. I mean, how different is it? It's still Windows, icons, you know, the WIMP interface.
Well, you know what? Here's what I think, again, one of the issues that this keeps coming up and talking about, well, should people have to learn how to use the operating system as opposed to, you know, should it be dumbed down and easier? I think, by and large, the problem that we have here is not with the complexity of Linux, because Windows is, you know, equally complex in its own way, and so is OS X. I think the big difference between Windows and OS X is the fact that Windows and Apple and OS X is extremely accessible to the general user because it's pre-installed on systems. You want to buy an Apple, you get OS X installed. You don't have to go install it yourself. You go out and buy a machine in most any venue, it's going to come with Windows pre-installed and configured for you. You know, the moment that you sit most people down, general users down, and say, you got to install your operating system, you know, they're stuck in the same boat, if not worse, than somebody who would have to install Linux. It's a difficult, fair, and unfair comparison, because time and time again, you hear people complaining, you know, oh, it's so difficult to get X, Y, and Z working properly in Linux, when most people who buy a computer don't have to go through that crap because it's already set up. But if you give somebody a Linux system that's already set up and completely working, what's the difference?
Yep.
I mean, now
Dan,
you got...
When you're, Dan, when you were an admin for the school district, right, you supported a bunch of Apple machines, right? You
right.
had plenty of issues getting certain things to work on there. Scanners, printers, and whatnot, right?
Oh, yeah. Apple works so long as you use Apple. Once you start deviating from Apple, you start running into problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. If you follow the Apple process, it's going to work. You know, Microsoft works by and large if you use Microsoft products. But if you start installing non-Microsoft products, then you start having a whole lot of problems. Unfortunately, a lot of those products are like HP drivers or something that blow your system up.
Yeah, that is definitely true. I swear, just the other day, I had to help someone at the office. We got a new computer in for them, Windows XP computer, and I was going to help her set it all up, and she has this HP, this is an HP computer, and she has an HP laser printer, all right, and it took me so long to get the drivers for that stupid printer to work on Windows. I downloaded like 6 different drivers from the HP website, all for the correct model, but it was just a total pain in the ass. It was just crazy. And this is supposed to be easy, you know, installing a driver on Windows.
Well, you're right. Yep. You know, and I also hear the pain of the person that has to go out and attempt to install a module in a Linux distribution that's not included in the kernel, and they have to actually compile it themselves. Oh, my God. I would never expect my wife to go through that process.
Yeah.
But, you know...
Maybe cranky or something about...
Yeah, no, that's what it is, Jeff.
I think it is. I am getting old. And I'm definitely a Luddite in some ways. And I just don't like... I just don't want Linux to lose, you know, what it is, I guess. I don't want Linux in general to do anything necessary to become as Windows-like as possible in order to get as many people as possible. I just don't want that.
Because we'll sell ourselves short is what you're saying, right? Why water it down?
That?
Make a crappier product. Yeah. Why water it down and make a crappier product just so that you can appease the idiots out there?
Linux is great as is. Does it have issues? Of course it has issues. There's things that need to be improved. The Pulse Audio thing's kind of a nightmare. I mean, I would like them to just pick one and stick with it. These are all things that we discuss all the time. But at the end of the day, it still is what it is. And it's great, and I don't think there's a need to sacrifice or to compromise and to become something that Linux isn't.
Well, I agree with you, Chad. Chad, I'm sorry. I agree with you, Chess. I agree with you, Chess, but I also think that, you know, there's a middle ground there, and it can be improved and more simplistic for people who want a more simplistic experience, but it doesn't have to be at the sacrifice of people who are comfortable with the way it is, and we don't have to sell out to achieve that.
Right.
And I think that, you know, look at how far it's come in the past year, in the past 2 years or 3 years, compared to what it was like 5 years ago. I mean, I think it's moving along. It might not be as fast as some people want it to be, but I think it's doing just great.
If I could just jump in, man, the one thing that has really made a huge difference to Linux the last 4 or 5 years, Ubuntu. No second qualms about that, man.
Oh, I agree with you.
It has increased market share. It's increased visibility. People have heard of Ubuntu. They know what it is.
What do you think, Chess? Do you agree with that statement?
About Ubuntu?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Definitely.
I do, too.
I mean, I don't use Ubuntu, but I think it's great. I think, without question, it has, improved a lot of things. And I think it has brought more users, but again, I worry about where everything's headed, but that's not necessarily Ubuntu's issue. That's more of a larger issue, but when I've used Ubuntu, when I've tested it out, it's worked great.
You know who hasn't weighed in on an opinion? I mean, I hear Joel popping in every now and then. What happened to Link? What's he have to say?
Where is he?
Oh, it's Penn?
I'm still here.
He's too busy on his OS X machine. What do you think?
Are you still not to. Gets me in trouble.
Or are you still mucking around with Dan's Guardian?
I just sent you an email about it, but no, I'm not mucking around with it anymore.
So do you have an opinion?
On what?
On what we've been talking about for the past half hour.
Generally speaking, I agree with Chess, actually.
Hmm.
It sounds like we all agree. Brian Lund is the idiot.
I don't remember anybody saying that.
Oh.
I agree with Gorkon.
That's a valid point. Yeah.
You know,
I
mean, what it is, though,
I
don't even really look at those articles anymore a lot because I get so tired. They always bring up the same damn issues over and over and over again. And mostly it's, you know, like Chess said, a lot of them is just moot points, you know. We already know that Linux is not Windows. Big deal, you know.
Basically, I see him. They tried to do the same kind of thing with the Mac community. Didn't work there. Now they're trying it with the Linux community. I mean, they wonder why people got pissed off at him. You know, I'm not pissed off at him. I think, you know, he has some valid points, but like Pat, I think he has. Just that he thinks everyone should just listen to him, and that everybody else's points are not valid, and that's wrong.
What you
said. Your points are only invalid if you disagree with myself or Richard Stallman. And in the latter case, it's just because you are confused.
That's right. Brian Lunduk is confused.
He has confused his opinions.
Brian should not try so hard. He is like trying so hard to be like a rock star and to get his name, you know, with so many hits and so many blog mentions and forum posts. You know, some people want attention. Brian wants attention. That's why he says these flaming things sometimes. That's the truth.
Yeah, and here we are giving it to him,
attention.
You know.
What Link said.
Good point, Link.
Brian wants attention. But Brian wants attention. John O'Bacon doesn't really want attention, but he gets it. And he's humble.
What? What? John O'Bacon's an attention whore.
Not entirely. At least I don't think so. I mean,
that's because you're a John O'Bacon lover.
John's just whatever. I don't even know where that T-shirt is anymore. Lug Radio is dead to me, and everybody else.
They're dead to everybody. I hate to break it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, I like John O'Bacon now. He's a good guy.
He's a cool guy. I don't have a problem with him.
You better not.
Anybody that carries around a picture of Dan's naked ass on their cell phone is all right in my book.
Somebody mail him and ask him if he still has it on his on his phone.
Did everybody just drop off?
Hello? I'm here.
What happened?
I'm still here. It sounds like Dan dropped off.
No, Dan just muted button himself.
Oh, Dan muted wife. Himself. Oh, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry about that. My wife just got home from school.
Quick topic change. One more. Dan, you had some issue with that so-called report that came out saying that Linux had 1% market share. So what are you trying to say? You disagree with that?
No, I think that Linux does have an over 1% market share when, according to net application websites. Whether that's representative of the total market, I can't say yes or no, because the statistics don't back that up. They just show people using net applications services. I don't use net application services, to my knowledge.
I never heard of it.
It's marketshare.com. So whatever sites utilize that and aggregate their information utilizing their I'm not exactly 100% sure. I've heard about what the services were that utilize that. I don't know. You know, so, you know, it's just like Netcraft. You know, the sites that utilize the Netcraft statistics, that's people utilize, you know, you can't say that is the overall. I'll do it. Don't worry about it. So that was my issue.
Dan's in trouble.
Is she making a mess?
I have a little issue with that as well.
Yeah, she's been doing that all night.
And my issue is this. Okay. As far as Linux usage goes, the internet itself was built on...
I'm sorry. She was up watching TV the last time I went up and checked on her.
Dan, you might want to mute yourself if you're going to talk about other things.
Okay. But she...
There he goes.
Okay.
The internet itself was built on mostly Unix servers. A lot of that now has transferred to Linux servers. I find it hard to believe that you can do... that you could do much on the internet without in one way or another touching a Linux server somewhere. That being the case, you know, whether people know it or not, pretty much everybody is a Linux user, and you know, in one sense of the word. It may not be a desktop Linux user, which is maybe what, you know, more what they're going for. But
the statistic was
a Linux
for
user
desktop
in general,
Linux users.
Yeah. Desktop Linux users, I can believe, you know, well, I don't know if I would even believe 1%. With that, I would bet it's higher than that, actually.
I would guess 5%.
Just because it would have to be bigger than 1%, because there's been, you know, every day when I look at the news, there's some other, either some large corporation or some country or, you know, municipality or something like that that is switching themselves over to Linux, just especially now, like with the economy, right? They're switching themselves over as a cost-cutting measure. So, you know, the limited scope that they had with 1% pretty much guarantees that it's higher than that to begin with. And then, you know, if you sort of filter out the fact that a lot of the statistics are going to be skewed in one way or another by Microsoft, you can increase your percentage even more. Right?
That's what I say.
Yes, no?
Yeah. What do you think?
I agree.
I agree with you on that. And that's what I said before, too, in my blog posting, that I so many people have beaten it to death now. But statistics are what they are. You can't necessarily extrapolate based upon, you know, say, these group of statistics do not necessarily support a completely different concept. You know, for net applications, they see a 1% Linux usage. Does that extrapolate over to overall desktop usage? No.
The very first thing I learned in my statistics class in college was that statistics can be skewed very easily, and almost always are.
Oh, yeah.
And lawyers especially are always doing that.
Especially if someone has an agenda.
Yes.
That's right. That's right, Dan.
You got to be curious about Chess's agenda. Everything he said tonight.
I got no agenda.
Oh, just you know, and just looking at what R.F. Quirin had said in the chat, and that's one thing that I was thinking about, too. I think what's interesting is that the statistics, and this was brought up at the beginning of March, too. The desktop Linux usage, according to net applications, was 0.88%. Now it's over 1%. So in less than a month, it's been a significant increase. And that's great, just for net applications. Mm-hmm. It would be nice to see, to track that trend over time and see what the fluctuations are. I think they have the capability of doing that off the Net Applications website, although I didn't delve into it as much as
but
I probably
you know,
should
seeing,
have.
Seeing that much growth in that short of period of time was a little, a little suspect, don't you think?
Why suspect?
Well, I mean, how likely is it that it really went that much in a month? I don't know, maybe. Guess that's when Jaunty came out, right?
Well, you know, I don't think it's just that. I mean, you have a whole lot of, you know, netbook sales that have gone on. You have more companies offering pre-installed Linux.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Than ever.
Yeah.
You have businesses moving some desktops over to it. You have overseas, which they do some overseas traffic reporting. So, and we've constantly heard about all these. Yeah, we've heard about all these you know, stories about this company's deploying tens of thousands of Linux desktops. So, you know, when are we going to see the results popping up of these, what you would call it, jobbies? You know what I'm saying, yo. Right, Chess?
I know what you're saying.
Yeah,
you know, I know what you're saying, Dan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yo.
I mean, look at Link, right? Over there. He's converting the entire campus to Linux, right, Link?
If I could, I would, yep.
He says, freedom be damned. But we shall see. Ask Mommy.
Dan, you're eating dinner at 10:30?
I like to eat with my wife, and my wife doesn't get home till now. So I'll be up for another two. Yeah, I know. It's rough. I don't like it. But if I want to eat with my wife, that's what I have to do.
What a nice guy you are.
I am. I want to make everybody happy. Do we have a guest next week? Yeah, we do have a guest next week, don't we?
The guy from the Command Line podcast is coming.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
So make sure you bone up on the Command
Line.
You should. What are you waiting for?
I've heard a couple of them. It's pretty good.
What am I waiting for?
It's good stuff.
I'm trying to figure out why the Tech Show Aug and Pat's Myth Aug file is not working on my clip.
Which was the last one? Did you test the last one?
Actually, I tested the last one and like one from 6 months ago.
And they both don't work?
Didn't have any. Yeah. But other Augs do. I don't know. I'll just use my Kwan.
I
have a clip and it worked fine.
I wonder if it has to do with the bitrate, that the higher bitrate that we're encoding it at.
It reminds me, there were a couple times, even on my Kwan, where certain AUG files, if they were using the variable bitrate, would sound kind of weird, and it reminded me of that. But I mean, it's not a big deal, because like I said, it works fine on my Kwan, so.
Worked on my, I have a Neuros MP3 player. It worked great on that. So
that's cool. The commandline.net.
And hopefully, if everything works out, a couple in on the 20th, we may have Jerry Ellsworth.
And who is Jerry Ellsworth, for people who don't know?
She's the one who did the Commodore 64 in a joystick. And also the C1 and various other small systems. She designed a lot of it, after dropping out of high school. I don't think she's ever had a college education yet.
When she comes
classic on? Classic games in a joystick.
I don't think. Yeah.
That's May 20th,
I think,
right?
She's got to check her schedule. Yes. If her schedule works out okay. I've got her penciled in right now. So hopefully that all works out. If not, it'll probably be sometime in June, I think.
Don't fail us, Gorkon. Don't fail us. Or we'll send Chess after you.
Hey, I think she's going to be fun.
She's also known
as Circuit Girl in the Fat Man and Circuit Girl video show on the web. I think it's available via RSS. I think it's a podcast. So. Sounds cool. I thought it'd be neat to talk to her at least once.
Yeah, sounds interesting. Guys, have anything else?
No. But I have a song already.
Uh-oh.
No, Brad Sucks. No, Brad Sucks. Understood by your dad.
Wouldn't you like to know?
That'll be next. No, there, you stay tuned.
Would you like
after
to
everything's
know?
Over, you'll get your monthly weekly dose of DOBA. Don't fret.
Overdose.
Everybody is off the call.
Is this from the presentation about why Brad sucks?
No, why does Brad suck?
I don't know. I haven't listened to that presentation yet.
Neither have I. But anyway, gentlemen, thank you. I'm going to play us out because Alan has to get to bed.
Alan already is in bed. Ha ha.
Here it is, your song of the week, understood by your dad.
Good night, guys.
Brad sucks. Nighty-night.
Good night.
Little things, body flags, looking around.
The Southeast Linux Fest is a community event for anyone who wants to learn more about Linux and free and open source software. It is part educational conference and part social gathering. Like Linux itself, it is shared with the attendees of all skill levels to communicate tips and ideas and to benefit all who use Linux and free and open source software. The Linux Fest is a place to learn, to make new friends, to network with new business partners, and most importantly, to have fun. Come join us for the first annual Southeast Linux Fest on June 13, 2009 in Clemson, South Carolina. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
It's a little thing TX show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cats, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a Lincoln bath. For the strongest, go direct to DLNGS.org. And I see channels at LinuxLink.net. Bound TX show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up.
Just shut up. It's over.
Haha. Wouldn't you like to know?
That's all she wrote.
I have to get going because I got to deal with some sick kid issues, so.
Oh, I hear you, man. Have fun, yeah. Dan. Have a good night.
Enjoy.
Good night, Gorgon. Good night, Link. Good night, Chess. Did I miss anybody?
Nope.
Good night, Alan.
Good night, Moon.
Good night, Alan, wherever you are.
But I would be remiss if I was not going to leave you with the Doba Song of the Week, Wishing Well.
I'm cutting my recording off right now.
So here it is, okay? Wishing Well. Oh, and it's starting off so good already.
Thank you.
Turn it up. There we go. That's better. I like the way that wavelength looks.
Turn up the radio. Give me some music. From that song?
No. What was that from?
What the hell is the name of the band? It was 80s stuff. Autograph.
Pow. 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 Well, that should be that.
I posted Carla Schroeder. She had a rebuttal to that 1% Linux market share claim.
Uh-huh. I didn't read that yet. Is it good?
I thought it was pretty good. Yeah, I'll post it in the admin room because I already did it in the other room.
Now I can go back to fixing my keyboard. And Gorkon says, why does it hurt when I pee? Why does it hurt when I pee? Something doesn't look right.
My stomach is starting to bother me. This is not good.
Time to go to White Castle. Somebody might be working from home. Oh, there we go. That fits perfectly.
If I'm puking and shooting at the other end, I'm not doing anything.
Working from home tomorrow? Or not working?
If I'm really sick, I'm probably not going to work. We'll see.
Is your oldest in school yet?
No, he's in preschool. He's starting kindergarten in the fall.
When did he start? How long has he been in preschool for?
Preschool? 3 years already.
Now, does he go all year long?
No. It's just during our school year. Twice a week, a couple hours a day.
Does he tend to get, catch illnesses at the beginning of the year and after long breaks?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, isn't that great? My patience with this keyboard key is about to run out.
Was this your System 76?
Yeah. Oh, wait. Maybe that's because... There we go. All
right. Hello?
Hello?
Hey, Link.
What's up?
How you doing?
Damn it, shitty.
Yeah, both of my kids have been sick the last few days with this nasty stomach virus. And, I don't know, I'm not feeling quite right. I hope I don't come down with it. The puke and shitting kind, the worst.
Sounds yummy.
Yeah. Maybe I should get a bucket ready.
Freaking hate this. How you doing now, Linky baby?
Beat tired. How about you?
Trying to fix my System 76 keyboard that somebody messed up.
Uh-oh.
Oh, wait, maybe that's why it's not working on it. Wait, how does that work?
Hello, this is Solve.
How you doing, Solve?
How are you?
Hi. Wasn't sure if I should call in at exactly 6:30, 8:30, or so I'm calling in now.
Yeah, we're here a few minutes early.
Perfect timing.
Okay.
You can hear me curse as I fix my keyboard.
Do I sound okay? I'm on speaker.
No, you sound fine. All right, here we go. Click. Well, maybe I'm supposed to connect this first. No, that's... look at that, Pat.
What am I looking at?
I don't know. No, that's not right. Why? You know what? There's an easy way to do this, I remember. From when
what are you talking about?
Trying to slide the key back on my laptop.
I have never disassembled a laptop, so you're asking the wrong person.
There's an easy way of doing this, and I can't remember which way it is. You know, it's easy if you take off another key to get this one on, but then you're stuck into that conundrum that you're constantly taking keys off until you... I want to know how they pried this damn thing off to begin with. I like how they hit it, too. They just closed the laptop lid, so I wouldn't notice when I opened it up again. Maybe he'll think he... Ah, there we go. Ha, ha, ha! Score one for the Danner. Maybe he won't know. Maybe he'll think he did it when he opened it up.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to put Dan's Guardian over top of this keyboard.
There you go.
Keep him right out of there. Mm-mm-mm. What time is it? Oh my goodness, it's right. It's showtime. How come we have like 9 hosts and we're still the only ones that show up? Where are the other 6?
Well, Alan said he's not feeling well. Gorkon said he's going to jump on a little later. Don't know about Chess or Dave or Chad or 3:30.
And I'm on call, so I may have to jump off at any point.
Yeah.
To go fix the Windows box.
Probably, yeah. It's, you know, I never get called when I'm on call to fix a Linux box. They just run. Pretty much when you're on call, you're like triage, right?
Uh-huh.
So... they call me up, and I triage the call, and I call the appropriate Windows admin.
And free and open source software. It is part education.
I'll tell you what. I can't wait until Southeast Linux Fest, because I am so sick of hearing this promo. Even though I think it's great.
Speaking of the promo, where is the sexy man himself?
That's what I'm wondering.
He's missing in action.
He and escaped.
If you don't hear me, you start calling my name and I don't respond. It could be because I'm running to the toilet.
That's nice.
I hope I don't get it.
That's good. Don't take the microphone in there with you like Dan wants to, you know.
No, I have mute on the way out.
Solveig.
Yes.
I forgot what I wanted to ask you. Sorry.
Favorite color?
Yeah, what is your favorite color?
Kind of a Minky Mossy Martha Stewart kind of green. Also, possibly Periwinkle.
Minty Mossy Green.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's on your desktop?
No, my desktop is the default blue.
Are you using a Fedora?
I'm not sure what you mean.
It's not that Windows desktop background blue, is it?
It might be.
We
got to get you set up, Solway. This isn't right. This is the second time you're on the show and you're not running Linux in any capacity.
I've got the machine at home. It's just that, you know.
They're making you run it at work? I understand.
That's what dual boot's for. Or virtual machines.
That's what VMs are for, yeah.
They're not allowed to run a virtual machine over there, right? Not that you guys have VirtualBox or anything.
Yeah, I know. Well, currently I do some work for a website company, and you have to do things exactly as they are. Is that a good excuse?
Yeah, it works for me. So, do you have a way to turn yourself up just a little bit? Because I don't want you to get lost in the... in Pat's background noise.
Let's see. I think the only way to turn things up is I can turn you up. I could turn down the fan. Let's see if that helps.
Or everybody else can turn themselves down. Link, can you turn yourself down a little bit? Link?
Dude, I'm not even talking, man.
All right, there you go. That's fine. Talk like that from now on. Wait, let me hear Pat.
Check, check, one.
All right. That's fine. All right.
And I'm back. I'm not sure.
All right, that's good. It's 8:30. So I guess we should start the show.
Let's get it going.
Let's get it going. All right. No sense in belaboring the inevitable. Here we go. Five. Oh, you know what? You guys need to remind me every week to unplug the audio cable from the laptop after I play the intro. That way we don't have a feedback hiss. Works
okay.
Out a lot better. So always remind me of that, because I tend to
forget. I'll keep sending reminders in the private room.
Yeah, well. Now actually tell me, too, because sometimes I'm not paying attention to the private room. You don't have to tell me now.